Before we dive in, two things. First, thank you. Listeners like you are why we do this. Our team works hard on every episode to ensure we bring you the best content possible. Second, it's a gift-giving time of year. People ask us all the time, what's your setup or what's your favorite gear? We put all of our favorites together in our new Generation Leader gift guide. Find recommendations for those hard to buy for people on your list and get them something great this year. Find the gift guide at newgenerationleader.fm/gift and we'll keep this up to date all year round. All right, let's get on with the show. Following Kevin DeShazo on social media will no doubt encourage you, equip you, and give you some great insights. As Kevin talks about on this episode, he has been diving into mindset and the power of how your mind can go to work for you. Kevin's work as co-founder of Better has taken him to some of the highest profile Division I college programs. He's worked with the college football playoff. He's visited campuses for a decade now, investing in the lives of student athletes and coaches around mindset, leadership, and performance. I'm excited for our conversation. Let's dive in.
Welcome to the New Generation Leader Podcast. We're giving you the tools you need to lead in the digital world. Ready to reach your true potential? This is the New Generation Leader Podcast.
All right, Kevin, college athletics has changed a lot in the last few years, and I'm sure between today and when this episode releases, it'll probably change in monumental ways. What are you seeing from your work with leaders in college athletics?
Yeah, I think the byproduct of change is just uncertainty. And so leaders are trying to figure out not just what the next 5, 10, 15 years of collegiate athletics looks like. What does the next 6 months look like? What does the next 12 months look like? Because just since July 1, the landscape has completely blown up and shifted with conference realignment. Just a year or two ago with NIL coming out, the transfer portal. I mean, this has been shift after shift after shift after shift in collegiate athletics. And so on some level, leaders are tired. Like, hey, when is the dust going to settle? When can we settle into some form of routine of leadership, but also just the uncertainty that creates some stress and some pressure for them to be able to lead their people well?
So how do you approach guiding them through that uncertainty?
I think this is really cliche, but on one hand, it's just the simple piece of control what you can control. All these things are happening. What does your attention need to be on today? What can you make progress on today? What can you move forward today? Because all these things are going on and you can't really control that. You can control what's best for your department, the steps that you are going to take. And so trying to get some control and some focus on where they are, because one, that allows you to actually make progress in the midst of all the stress and the chaos and the adversity, which is the best way to be in a good position. If you let fear take over and you just kind of throw your hands up and you become paralyzed in the midst of chaos, you're setting your department up for failure. So trying to get leaders to one, focus on what they can actually control and put their time and energy there. But then two, the conversation we've been having with athletic departments for the last couple of years is how do you build a 21st century athletic department? Because the way college sports was is not the way college sports is, and it's not the way it's going to be. And so what are the steps you need to start putting in place today to start moving down the road to create not necessarily a futuristic athletic department, but the athletic department of the future?
It changes all around us. As you've described in college athletics, it's not going away. It's not changing. It's just coming faster. And so we're seeing iteration after iteration of change. I've always used the analogy of the size of a floppy drive to the hard disks and phones we keep in our pockets now, and the infinite rise in data capacity. And change is just keeping right up there with that.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. And it feels like we've gone from the floppy disk to the iPhone in the past year and a half in college sports, right? Like that's the pace of change. And I think that's part of what's been unsettling for leaders is that they aren't able to catch their breath because we know that change is always constant, but it's the size of the significance of the change, right? It's not just a rule here or there. It's industry changes that impact every single person in college sports. And it's day after day after week, these changes keep hitting. There are changes that happen in college sports that don't impact everyone. You know, this school could do this thing or this leader could do this thing. You're like, that's fine. That doesn't really impact us. And you can keep going about your day. But all the changes that have been happening over the last year and a half or so have impacted everyone. So everyone's just been on high alert every single day because of the significance of every change that falls on their desk.
You've worked with a lot of leaders in college athletics from the college football playoff to Power Five schools and programs. all the way down to high school programs. As you walk in the door the first time, you were giving a recommendation to a leader in athletics anywhere in that ecosystem. Where would you encourage them to focus to take a first step so that they're prepared and ready for this ever-changing environment they're around?
Yeah, I think I'm going to cheat on the answer and say probably two things. Number one, what are the actual strengths and weaknesses of you individually, but also of your team? Where can your team be at their best? And what are the potential blind spots that could take your team out if you don't shore those things up? But two, to think about, like, what are the asteroids that are coming in? And when are they going to hit? And what are they going to cost? Could be time, could be money, could be impact, could be changes that have to be made, and start to prioritize those asteroids. Because it can feel like everything is urgent and important, and like this thing is on our doorstep today. Well, that may actually be 5 years down the road. Well, that one may be 7 years down the road. This may be 18 months. What's today? What's 2 months? Because everything can feel overwhelming, right? When there's so much change happening, it can feel overwhelming, but to help them get perspective, say, no, what's the thing today? What is the actual most urgent issue you as a leader and your team and your department needs to be focused on today? We need to have plans for these other things, but we need to actually take action for this asteroid, for this meteor today that's going to be hitting us quickly. The strength and weaknesses of your own leadership and your own leadership team, but prioritizing which things you want to attack first.
One of the things I've recognized as we've launched this athletics leadership channel is just how applicable all of these lessons are. So everything you just said, it applies to any leader. We're focusing the conversation on athletics, but strengths, those asteroids, change, it's confronting all of us. We're all facing this. And it's been really good to hear. We see headlines. We watch ESPN. We hear these exposés from Marty Smith. He's my favorite. Or any examples of stories that we hear from college athletes. And I don't know if we watch their action on the field or on the court. We see them play. We see the result. We celebrate the wins. We mourn the losses of our favorite teams. But I don't know that we fully grasp the system that's behind them. And every resource that's coming at them. Coach Grant Leonard from Queens University, he was walking through all of the resources that they've built up and bolstered just to get their men's basketball program up to Division I. What are you seeing in terms of those support structures, and how does what you're doing in leadership and culture complement all of the other ways that programs are supporting their student athletes of today and of tomorrow?
You know, it's interesting. Every program at their core, they're looking for a competitive advantage, right? What can we do to get this 17-year-old to commit to our program? And if we can create any advantage, any leverage, we are going to do that, because that's how we stay competitive. That's how we stay relevant. Our success is dependent upon us getting the best 17, 18-year-olds in the country to our campus. And whether that's creative, right, graphic design, the branding they're doing for kids, even just on a visit, photo shoots have become this huge thing. So you've got kids leaving with these, looks like they're on the cover of Sports Illustrated, right? Just insane stuff. But you've got sports science, right, where they're measuring every single movement and measurable thing from their health in practice throughout the day, trying to, again, maximize everything for their performance. You've got NIL departments and collectives that are part of the university, but not really part of the university in terms of how they're operating within it, but it's still a resource. You've got all these different areas where you're trying to say, how do we maximize the student athlete experience? Because the big conversation over the last, let's say, 5 years or so has been around the student athlete experience. How can we create a great student athlete experience? And it's interesting because you can walk in some of these places and the food these players get, I mean, it's unbelievable, right? Like when I was in college, I was eating 99-cent Totino's pizzas and ramen, and I thought it was great. Like, I was thrilled with that. I didn't feel like, you know, my life was suffering in any way, shape, or form, especially football and basketball, some of the revenue generating sports, like the food that they're getting, the lodging that they get, the gear, the thousands of dollars worth of gear. You've got nutritionists that give you everything you need to eat and why and when and how throughout your entire day. You've got academic specialists. Get all this stuff to make your life a success, both on the field, in the classroom, and in life, which is a great thing. On top of that, they're getting a free education. This is all kind of going into it. But it's really interesting because you can have all of those things. You can have great facilities, great weight rooms, all the best resources to give your student athletes. But if the people they interact with the most on a day in and day out basis aren't healthy leaders, none of that stuff matters, right? They're going to walk into that weight room and hate life because that strength and conditioning coach isn't a good leader. They're going to walk into practice and hate life because that coach is not a good leader. That nutritionist is not a good leader. That academic advisor is not a good leader. All these people interacting with them aren't secure, humble, confident, self-aware, intentional leaders. On the flip side, you can take away all those things. Now, you're probably not going to get them to your campus because those flashy things do help in recruiting. But at the same time, I think every one of these kids, when you ask, why did you go to this school? Because my relationship with the head coach or the assistant coach who was recruiting me, I'm not going to choose this school because I have a cool weight room and I hated the coach. Like, cool weight room, but I really connected well with the coach. But you could take away all those things if the head coach is a healthy leader, strength coach, healthy leader, nutritionist, healthy leader, academic advisor, healthy leader, and the medical staff, healthy, like all the people that they interact with, if they're really, really strong, good leaders, take away all the facility stuff, all the other cool things, and the student athletes are going to walk out saying, that was the best 4 years of my life. Even if we didn't win, even if we didn't have cool facilities, I was surrounded by and invested in and developed by unbelievable leaders. And so that's been our focus, is to say, actually, if you want an elite student athlete experience, that means you have to make sure the people that interact with them the most are unbelievable leaders, because that's going to multiply down to the student athletes.
College athletics is in the midst of colossal changes. From NIL to the transfer portal and conference realignment, athletics programs are facing mounting pressure. How are these pressure points affecting your leadership? The waves of change require a different approach to building programs, leading teams and departments, developing players, directing coaches, and in how you think about athletics. It's becoming too easy to leave and too hard to create trust. This requires you to think better, communicate better, lead better, perform better, be better, every single day. Better can help. Better has built the very best of 21st century leadership thinking and tied world-class content to simple technology to help ADs, administrators, coaches, and athletes thrive in the midst of the chaos the athletic world is facing. As a listener of the show, Better is offering a unique opportunity for your college program or high school team. Better starts with you. Learn more at newgenerationleader.fm/better.
If you're anything like me, keeping up with all the people you know is hard. I forgot Tom's birthday. I had a meeting in town and forgot Jamie lives here now. Who was that strategic planner I met last year? Clay is a game changer for me. It puts all of my connections, contacts, text messages, LinkedIn connections, all in one place, reminding me about what and who is most important. Then, every morning, Clay's AI engine reminds me, birthdays, who I should reconnect with, and lets me take notes so I remember important details. Safe, secure, and thoughtful. Clay, the AI-powered system for cultivating amazing personal and professional relationships. Try Clay for free today at newgenerationleader.fm/clay. As you look at those teams and programs you've worked with, you guys have built a model to not only multiply the leaders, but multiply the multiplication of leaders. Walk us through what you've built and how that's working to implement what you're describing there.
So part of what we've been in the athletic space, probably 6-7 years at this point, in terms from a leadership perspective, my initial background in this industry was doing social media training, but we've been working with coaches and student athletes and athletic directors and teams over the last several years, trying to help them with leadership, trying to help them with culture, with communication, with performance, with mindset, have had unbelievable success. We've worked with national champions, conference champions, state champions at the high school level. The problem is, as tends to happen in a lot of these types of businesses, is I can only do so much, right? I can only work with a handful of teams. Jeremy, my business partner, can only work with a handful of teams. There's a limit to who we can actually work with on a significant level in terms of actually being on the ground. And you know, like, we travel with Oklahoma football at this point. We work with a lot of their teams. We're in Oklahoma City. So we have a different relationship with them than we can have with most schools because we have families and other things that we have to do. So after last year with football, we kind of sat back and said, okay, what did we learn fully being entrenched in what student athletes are actually experiencing, what coaches are actually experiencing? Because we knew just by having conversations with leaders, but once you're in it, you just have a different perspective of what they're actually experiencing and what their pain points are. So I said, okay, what did we learn? And how do we take what we did and give this to everybody? Because everybody needs it. It doesn't matter what your budget is, the amount of resources that you have, what level of sport that you're at. You need to be investing in and developing the mindset, the leadership, and the performance of your coaches and your student athletes. And so the best have a system for that, right? So they don't just talk about it. They don't just hope for the best or do a book study or watch a video. They randomly pulled from YouTube, like, well, I hope this video of Kobe like connects with our student athletes. It's not bad, it's just not intentional. It's all accidental stuff because leaders are busy, coaches are busy, and they feel the pressure of winning. And so we took everything we did and learned and created what we've called the Better System and made it scalable and accessible and affordable for everyone in the sports world. So we've got high school programs who are launching it up to Power 5 programs. The main two things we can talk about that I think are really helpful, number one is it's called the Culture Playbook. So we took 10 of our foundational tools and concepts with a short exercise for a coach to use their leadership team, right, their team captains, depending on team size, they can do it with the whole team if they've got, you know, 15, 20 people on a team. But this is, say, you can talk about culture, here's your culture system. Watch this, implement it, have the discussion with your players. And what's great is that the coaches can just hit play. They don't have to feel the burden of being the expert on all this stuff. Say, hey, let's just do this. And it's short. One unique thing about sports, three of us, we go to a corporate event or work with businesses. They'll take an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, half day, full day, whatever it may be, to go through a lot of this stuff. Sports, like, can we do it in 30 minutes? 15 would be even better. And so we've made these all really short and sweet, 10 to 15 minutes. So it's not a time burden on the coaches of the teams as well. They can watch it and then go to practice or whatever it may be. The other thing we did is we gave a team talk every week to OU football during the season. 10, 12, 15 minutes on adversity, on failure, on success, on mindset, on leadership, on culture, on commitment. Every team needs that. And so we filmed 36 of those to provide those for schools. And so some coaches may use 7 of them, you know, based on what their team needs. But there's 36 because there's 36 weeks in a school year, so they could technically use a team talk every single week to set the tone, set the theme, and invest in their players. Again, it's all centered around mindset, leadership, and performance. And it just takes the burden off of a coach, off of a team, and helps them to get better faster.
Brian and I were with a team this morning, and he was describing, using the analogy of high school football program that he coached in. And I've recognized, the more I watch, the older my kids get, the more they're around friends, recognizing just how much high school athletics has changed since I was playing high school athletics. I mean, we barely had a facility, much less a locker room and the gear and the tools and everything that goes into programs. So breaking it down for us to that high school level, how have high schools been using better? And what is it that gets those coaches thinking outside of just skills and thinking about mindset, leadership, and performance?
Yeah, I think it's realizing that the skills piece is no longer enough, right? And that the football part, the basketball part, the baseball part, the swimming and diving part, the track and field, whatever sport they're coaching, that's the easier piece because they know the sport, they know the game. It's the other stuff that's causing them the headaches, right? It's the drama, it's the disconnect, it's the frustration, it's the burnout. And no matter how good of a sport coach they are, it's not going to make those other things better. And so to say, wait a minute, we can win and have less drama, and have better communication, and have less frustration, and have less transfers, and have less, you know, all the laundry list of stress and negativity. And we're saying, yeah, you can. Winning doesn't have to be what you've experienced. There's enough stress that comes with it just by the nature of the beast. You don't have to have all this unnecessary stress. And so I think high school coaches and high school athletic directors are realizing that that's a necessity. I think number two, I think we're just realizing the opportunity to invest in people at the high school level as leaders. And if we want to actually talk about developing young people as leaders, as productive citizens, as people who are going to go on and do great things in the world, we've got to equip them for that. And it's not just going to happen in the classroom. They're going to learn a lot of lessons from sports, but we have to be more intentional with other lessons that we're going to give them and how we're going to develop them. And so it's been fun. I got a message from, you know, I was in a similar situation to you. My high school, we were really good at most sports. I went to a large high school in Oklahoma. I think my senior year, we won 13 state titles. Football, we won like 8 or 10 in a row, like just, you know, powerhouse type school. And I was speaking there a week or two ago, launching the Better System with them. And when I was there, this was, you know, I graduated 2000, and our facilities, people, like, they would pull in like, this is, that's an interesting stadium. You know, like, it's not what people would have expected for a program of that caliber. Well, you drive in now and they've redone the stadium. It's better than some small colleges. It's unbelievable. And so I told them, I was like, hey, this is all great, but we won when I was here. We won and we didn't have all this stuff. We won because we had the most talent. We had the best culture. But to say, hey, again, all this stuff's cool, but we got to be developing these young people to perform, because all this actually does is create more pressure for young people. You put all these facilities, all these resources around them, now they feel even more pressure to win. So how are we going to help them handle that and develop them? So I got a message from that high school football coach the other day. They were watching some of the videos on mindset. It's like, we're working on our mindset this week. I'm like, I love it. Because they would, no matter how great of a coach they are, they don't know what to do with a lot of this stuff. And it's not because they're bad leaders, bad coaches, like this just isn't their area of expertise, but they know it's important. We're saying, yeah, you're right. Here's the system. We're going to remove that burden from you and make it easier for you.
All right. So take us back. You leave high school. What was your path that took you into collegiate athletics for the social media responsibility side of things, and then on into leadership from there?
Yeah, so I went to Oklahoma State University. And for those listening, yes, I said earlier that University of Oklahoma is one of our biggest clients. So that's been a weird relationship, especially with my oldest, who's like the most loyal human being on the planet. He's like, Dad, are we still OSU fans? Like, what? And my wife's like, look, we pay OSU, OU pays us, we are OU fans. So I went to Oklahoma State. My wife went to Oklahoma Baptist University here in Oklahoma as well. We met. She got a job actually with Jeremy Kubitschek and Giant, first job out of college. So she was employee number 3 back in the day. It was called Giant Partners. So I followed her to Oklahoma City. I'm going to skip over a part where I was an embalmer's assistant for 6 months, but moved to Oklahoma City, and Jeremy helped me get a job in healthcare recruiting, my first kind of big boy job after college. And so I worked in the healthcare industry for a number of years, and there started using Facebook was becoming a big deal. The economy was tanking. I realized at one point my whole team was on Facebook all day, and our corporate office was taking away all these resources that we had. Our job was finding nurses and placing them in temporary positions. Well, they kept taking away all the job boards, which impacted our ability to fill jobs. And so I realized one day my team was all on Facebook. I was like, I bet these nurses are too. What if we could find some nurses on? So we started using Facebook as a recruiting tool. And it was then the kind of light bulb went on of like, okay, social media is more than like pictures of your aunt's cat. Like there's some actual business opportunity here. And this was 07, 08, 09-ish. And so our team kept growing through that recession. We were the only team in the organization that was actually hitting their goals. And about that time, Twitter came out. I became quickly obsessed with Twitter because for me, it was like, I got to have conversation with anybody. Think about Facebook's like, you know, I don't always want to connect with the people who want to connect with me. I don't always care about what's going on in their lives. Twitter, it doesn't matter. Like if they don't want to follow me, great. I don't care. I get to follow interesting people. And so I was having conversations with tech CEOs, with professional athletes. This is insane. So always been a sports fan. And I, for some reason, I just started complaining about college athletes being banned from social media. And so this is back in, again, 09 to 2010. Steve Spurrier banned his players from Twitter. Chris Peterson banned his players from Twitter. And it was just seen as this negative thing. And I was like, no, it's actually, if they understood how to use it, it's a really useful thing, both for the student athletes and for the university, because these are kind of their frontline brand ambassadors. And it'll help student athletes wherever they go in life, because it's just increasingly becoming a digital world. So if you're in sales, if you're in marketing, if you're in whatever you do, you got to understand social media these days. So I just complained enough to people that a friend said, well, either do something or stop talking about it. And I was like, well, I didn't know a soul in college athletics, didn't know anybody. And he's like, that doesn't matter. You know, social media, figure it out. Okay. And I already left the corporate world, started my own business, failed miserably. So I go to my wife. I was like, clearly I'm good at business. I think I should start another one. And for some reason, she was like, sure, go for it. And so started this company to do social media training and just started connecting with anybody I could find in college sports. And so then began traveling the country for the next decade, you know, doing social media presentations. And at some point in that, started having conversations with athletic directors and coaches just about leadership and about culture, which I'd always been interested in, always found myself in leadership positions, whether I deserved them or was qualified for them. So that was always something that I was interested in, passionate about, and started having these conversations. And I realized there was a massive gap in leader development in college sports. It's not unique to that industry. Obviously, it was just where I spent my time. And the typical leadership development for that space looked like a lot of other spaces. Bring in a speaker, like, man, that was awesome. Like, they were funny and engaging. And then 2 weeks later, yeah, but what does it mean to be positive? How do we actually do any of those things? All good. Not the messages were bad. There was no practical application. And so at that time, Jeremy was moving back from London and said, hey, I want to, shot me an email, said, hey, I'd love to catch up, show you what we're working on. We're moving back to Oklahoma City. It's like, cool. And I had just started a daily email for leaders in college sports. I didn't know what to do. I'm like, I'll just send him a daily email and maybe try to encourage him a little bit. So and that led to ADs who were reading that saying, hey, can you come do a staff retreat? Like, can you, I'm like, ethically, I don't think I can. Like, I don't have any content. I could make it up, but I just didn't feel right doing that. So that's when Jeremy, exact same time he was moving back, and he walked through some of the kind of foundational Giant tools. I was like, yep, I need that. Number one, as man, dad, husband. But number two, that's the piece that's what I want to be doing in college sports. Because I knew ultimately I didn't want to be 50 talking about social media. Yeah, and student athletes didn't want me to be 50 talking about social media, but leadership and performance and mindset and culture and community, like those are things I could do for the rest of my days. And so we started having a conversation and here we are.
Here we are. It's been a fun journey to follow and watch all the places you go, and you've mastered the art of sharing, continuing to share now leadership insights on social media. What's the intersection for you right now with NIL and personal branding and leadership? How does that fit in for this time?
Yeah, it's a great question. I've not done much. I think there's a significant need around NIL because most of the conversation is how to make money. Like, well, it needs to be how to understand how to build a brand more than anything else. And so the education piece is not there. It's just been skipped over. There are great companies and services out there who are helping student athletes facilitate deals. You know, and they'll get paid however much to do something on social media. Well, yeah, but do you know how to actually build a valuable social media presence? How to post something that's gonna be valuable to you and that brand? There's a huge opportunity there. I've not engaged much in it just because we've been so busy with the leadership stuff. I still get asked every now and then to come do a social media presentation for student athletes. And it's been fun because it's kind of shifted from when I started doing it, Instagram didn't exist, Snapchat didn't exist. It was basically just Facebook and Twitter. And we've had a number of other platforms come and go over the last decade. But early on, it wasn't so much how to build a brand. So schools, you know, they wanted me to come in and scare their student athletes off social media. Initially, they're like, hey, will you come in and like really scare them and put the fear in them? I was like, sure. If that gets you to write the check, bring me to campus, I'll let you think that that's what I'm going to talk about. And then when I'd get to campus, it's like, hey, here's a way to actually think about using it. Here's a way to be intentional. It wasn't a don't tweet this, don't post that, don't be an idiot. Like, hey, you need to have a why. If you're going to spend 4 hours a day on these platforms, why? What's the ROI? Not just money, but what are you going to get from that today as a student athlete, tomorrow as you move into the real world? If you want to, how can you build a profitable brand on social media? How can you market yourself in a way that you can set yourself up for monetary success today and in the future? So the conversations have changed a little bit, which is fun because ADs have gone from fearing it because they were unaware of it, right? Ignorant of, we become afraid of. So they were afraid of it early on because they just didn't understand it. Well, now the world mostly understands it, and it's how do we actually maximize it? And so the conversations have changed, but I've not been spending a ton of my time and energy there, mostly out of capacity. Yeah.
Actually, Kevin, if you don't mind, I kind of wanted to go back on a couple of things you talked about earlier when you were talking about the examples of shortcomings and asteroids. Can you give examples of what any of those look like in some of the athletic situations you work with?
Yeah, I think NIL is still, because it's here, but it's still an asteroid that's coming because people don't know really, they don't know how it's going to change. So Congress getting involved in NIL could be an asteroid. A players union could be an asteroid. Funding moving from your development office to a collective could be an asteroid. Conference realignment could be an asteroid. All these different things that universities are now facing, will the NCAA go away? You know, there's a conversation of like, is the NCAA going to exist? So all these are kind of asteroids that are floating around. Some of them are further down the road. Some of them are on their doorstep, you know.
I didn't know if there were anything other specifics to the internal workings of the organizations, any shortcomings that come up with just how the athletics administrations themselves are functioning. Are there anything, any examples inside of that?
Yeah, I think they're having to figure out, one, this industry is having an insane amount of turnover right now, just within the athletics office, within the administrations, not coaches, but marketers, communications, development officers, trainers, because the hours are incredibly long and the pay is not great. And it's a known thing. And it's interesting because part of it is like, yeah, well, if you leave, we've got 700 people who would love to have your job because they think working for this team is going to be awesome. And so the pay has always suffered. And it's not just a college sports thing. It's just a sports industry because everyone thinks it would be really cool to work in sports. I mean, if you're in communications and college athletics, let's say you're making $50,000 a year and you're working 60 to 70 hours a week, well, you can go get a corporate communications job and make more and work 40 hours a week and not have the stress or pressure and get to actually see your family. And young people tend to be less willing to sacrifice today than they used to be. And that's not a, you know, right, wrong, good, bad. That's just an observation of the way culture is shifting. Is the young people today is like, I'm not going to work 60 hours a week or 70 hours a week for this pay. You're insane. So I think administrations are having to figure out this asteroid of the workforce. And how do we adjust? How do we adapt? Do we need to have a variable cost model? What if we don't have a full-time you know, marketing staff? What if we have a director of marketing and then we have freelancers that we contract with for work to impact our budget in different ways? And so I think just the way that college athletics, it's such a part of the issue with college sports is that it shifts very slowly. And the NCAA has said before, when they were trying to keep up with social media regulations around recruiting and what coaches could and couldn't do in terms of sending a message to a recruit, posting about a recruit, all this stuff, they said, anytime we make a change, we're already a year behind, because it's like trying to shift the Titanic and redirect it. And so college sports as an industry is that way. They tend to kind of be in their bubble, and they don't look outside of college sports very often to understand different models and how different industries work, how different businesses work. It's a very copycat industry. It's like, oh, well, Texas did this, so Alabama should do this, and now Georgia should do this, and Colorado should do this. And instead of saying, no, what's actually best for us? And at some point, that's going to hit, and people are going to say, wait a minute, we've got to completely rethink our business model, not as a whole industry, although that's part of it, but just as an individual athletic department, of how do we shift and meet the demands of the new world?
So when you're working with some of the athletic departments and with some of the student athletes themselves, what are some of the, if you can be specific, that'd be great. This may not be the best formed question of the world, but what are some of the leadership topics that you find yourself most taking these athletes through or trying to pour into them?
Yeah, for athletes right now, it's communication with their teams. It's how to hold their teammates accountable. This generation, what I've noticed, and this could be true of many generations when they're 19 years old, they don't want to hold each other accountable. And they don't want to be the jerk on the team. And so there's a real issue in knowing that a teammate is getting off the path, so to speak, and how do we redirect them? How do we hold them accountable without, one, appearing to be a jerk, without, two, making that athlete not quit in terms of quit the team literally, but just quitting in terms of they just start going through the motions, right? They stop giving their best with the anticipation. Then they're like, well, then they're going to transfer. And so there's a pressure there of how do we communicate? How do we hold each other accountable? I don't know if this is a leadership thing, but for student athletes, the mental component right now, just the amount of pressure that they feel, we've made everything a mental health issue, and not everything is a mental health issue. Like, the things that people are facing aren't actually that big of a deal. For the most part, yes, there are people who are facing obviously very significant things. For the most part, lives aren't hard, right? It's like your coach critiqued you. Well, that doesn't mean they hate you and that they want you to quit. And like, this is life. It's not that difficult until you make it that difficult because of the way you think. And so I think for student athletes, trying to help them understand the mindset piece and how to not just perform under pressure, but just relieve some of the internal pressure that they're experiencing, because stress isn't your situation, right? Situations are neutral. Stress is your response to a situation. And so helping them understand that aspect. I think for coaches or athletic directors, administration, it's how do you balance caring for people? Hey, we have a job to do. Leadership forever has been high challenge, low support. Right? For the most part, since the beginning of time, high challenge, low support, don't care how you feel, just get the job done. And there's obviously good from that. People have performed, people have won, things have been accomplished. There's obviously a significant amount of bad that comes from that. People are overlooked and abused and all sorts of other terrible negative things. And over the past, let's say, 15, 20 years, we've slowly started to shift towards hey, people matter, and we got to treat them as people and care about them. That will actually lead to higher performance. But I think when COVID hit and a few other things, that we just swung right through the middle all the way over to here. And I don't mean this as a negative against her, but I call it the extreme over Brene Brownification of the world. And I think she's incredible. Like, I love her stuff, but it's taking it to the extreme. I think she would agree. Like, the things people are doing is like, well, that's not exactly what I was saying. But it's saying like, hey, you matter and you're human and you should be valued and respected, to saying, no, your emotions and your feelings, let's hand them the keys to the car. And that's however you feel is however you feel. I'm like, no, that's actually dangerous and overwhelming for that person, but also for everyone around them. And we've got to get back to the center ground of like, hey, people matter and they should know we care about them. They should know that we are for them. We should listen to them, be compassionate. But at the end of the day, we're actually here and paid, or whether it's actual dollars or with your housing or education or whatever, to get a job done and to perform a task. And it's okay to remind people like, hey, the organization actually isn't here to serve you. You're here to serve the vision of the organization. It's not that cold and transactional, but at the end of the day, that's actually what we're here for. They say, hey, do this. We'll give you this much money or provide these whatever in compensation. You say, great, here's what I will do. And you agree, and we have to do that. And so I think we're in this culture now where it's hard for leaders. They feel like to hold people accountable, to bring healthy challenge, to say, hey, I care about you. I know that was difficult, but we have a job to do. And so I think leaders are really struggling in that space of, one, how do we connect with this generation and lead them well? But two, how do we bring healthy challenge without being labeled toxic?
That was such a good piece that you just did, because I had probably 7 questions as follow-ups and you answered every one of them. Because one of the big things
being a connector who talks too much.
No, it was great. Just thinking back to 30 years ago, 40 years ago, the old adage was, hey, if the coach isn't yelling at you, he doesn't care about you. So today, that's still mostly the same thing if they're not getting on you, but having to find that line, because when you mentioned this, sort of the pendulum swinging all the way to the other side during COVID, and now it is a big part of it. I even hear it. It's that struggle for, back to the support challenge mention, getting people to realize that challenge isn't necessarily a bad thing. Challenge with requisite support is how you're going to grow, get ahead. You know, I looked at the transfer portal the other day, and there were more than 1,000 college athletes who entered the transfer portal who did not find a new home.
It was like 45% or something crazy. I mean, it's wild. What I think we're doing is we are enabling weakness. We're enabling weak mindsets. We're enabling weak habits. We're enabling weak performance in the name of being nice, right? And caring about people, we're actually doing the opposite. And so it's really fascinating with a team recently, and someone was really frustrated. We were talking about accountability. And I said, talking about this idea of being responsive versus resistant. And most people are resistant to accountability, to challenge, because it doesn't feel good, right? Nobody likes to be held accountable or challenged. Like, it never feels good. That's okay. But at some point, you have to work through that to become responsive. And I said, what's interesting is that if you hold a teammate accountable today, or someone that you lead accountable, they're going to throw a fit. How dare you? You're a jerk. Why'd you do that? I can't believe you don't like me. Okay, I was just trying to give you, you know, honest feedback. I'm not dropping a bomb on you and saying, fix this, you're not good, good luck. It's, hey, this needs to get better, how do I help? But people tend to have a negative, resistant response to that. And what happens in leaders, like, okay, cool. If this is how these conversations are gonna go, then I just, clearly you don't wanna hear feedback, so I won't provide you with feedback. Well, in 6 months, we're gonna fire that person because they're continuing to make the same mistakes and costing us time, costing us money, causing drama, whatever the ramifications are. And at that point, they're gonna say, well, why didn't you tell me? Well, I did tell you. You don't want to hear it. And so it's for people to understand, when do you want to be held accountable? When you have a chance to fix it, or when it's too late? Because at some point, that conversation is going to happen. And so people want it both ways. They don't want to be held accountable, but they don't want to be fired for not being fixing the things they're not being willing to be held accountable for. And so leaders are trying to navigate that space, and it's tricky right now.
Well, that's one of the things I love that you guys have built into Better, is having that conversation with student athlete. Not just good, bad, what would you improve? What would you do different? But you have specific, tangible ways to say, in this realm, here's how we're doing. In this realm, here's how we're doing. And examine the whole student athlete, the whole coach, the whole athletic department staff member. And there is a comprehensive side to feedback that if we can take a look at the full picture, it helps us celebrate what's worth celebrating, raise up what needs to be raised up, but also have those hard conversations that we do just have to have at some level.
And I think most people, when we look back on the leaders who have made the most impact in our lives, who have been the most significant, they weren't the kindest or most comforting. That doesn't mean they weren't caring. They actually were being kind because they told us the truth. They held us accountable. They brought the healthy challenge that is actually being kind, right? Is to speak the truth and say, hey, I love you. This needs to get better. And then what can I do to help, right? And that's the piece where we're trying to help coaches and student athletes navigate the space of, one, when you give the common language and they know they're for each other, the student athlete, to remind them, hey, this coach, remember, you signed to play with them. You've shown up every day and they've shown up and done their job. They've invested in you. Remember why you came here. Because my tendency, I've got people in my life who can hold me accountable, who can, my wife wrong, my kids wrong, whatever. And it's horrible. And so I try to not do those things because I don't want to be held accountable for it. Well, obviously I have an extremely high level of trust in. But as soon as they do, I'm like, I start to dismiss them. Like, well, you don't know. And wait a minute, no, these are people that I trust and that I know who actually care about me. So one, trying to remind student athletes like, hey, this coach, they're not mad at you. They're not disappointed at you. They're not trying to embarrass you. They're not angry with you. They're actually trying to help you. And they probably told you this in the recruiting process, like, you've seen their coaching style. But also we're trying to help coaches in the recruiting messages saying, hey, this is what our culture is going to be like. We're going to support you this way, this way, this way, this way. But my job is actually to make you better, which means we're going to have some hard conversations. If we don't, that means I don't care, or I'm unwilling to actually help you get better. So I'm gonna challenge you, I'm gonna push you, but we're gonna have the support system around you to make sure that there is that challenge, there is that accountability, that you have the opportunity to move in the right direction. And most people just aren't equipped to have those conversations. So the more we can give them the tools and the trainings and the opportunities to have success in those conversations, the better they tend to go.
A couple seasons ago, I watched two football games in the same day, both Division I, both actually ACC games. One of them, it was one of those early in the season games, an FCS team playing at an ACC team. The FCS team's punter didn't do what he was supposed to be doing. And the coach lit him up. Fast forward 8 hours, Clemson's playing in the night game. Dabo Swinney, probably at the same decibel level as this other coach, just as animated, just as in his face, but you could tell the distinction from the facial expressions, that the one was lighting this kid up in a never-ending, I mean, he was just going off on this kid. It was embarrassing. I actually rewound it, recorded it just to like save that snapshot. And then you see Dabo Swinney's facial expressions and you can tell that he's trying to draw out and elevate this player. Correction, yes. Accountability, yes. But there's a big difference between feeling small and feeling like, okay, yes, I should fix that next time.
Because we tell coaches all the time, like, hey, like, don't let your emotion get the best of you. Focus on what you can control. Do your job, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, how often do we see coaches lose their emotion, lose their cool on the sidelines? Like, you've got to be modeling that. And this 18-year-old made a mistake. And coaches feel this insane amount of pressure on every single play. Their job is always on the line. And their job is up to whether or not 18-year-olds perform it at a high level. There's a crazy amount of stress with that. If you want your players to be in control, you have to be in control. Otherwise, you have zero credibility. And that player is completely tuning you out to the point like they're resenting you because of the way that you interact with them. And then the other thing, leaders always like, forget the last play, play the next play, right? Next play mentality. Well, I can't play the next play if you're still talking about that one play 7 minutes later. I'm trying to get back in the game. I'm trying to correct things. I know I made a mistake. And that's the things like players aren't dumb, right? Just like people in our organizations, like people know for the most part when they made a mistake. They're being hard enough on themselves because they have enough pressure. And it's interesting, you go into Clemson, you walk in the facility and it's like, best is standard is their phrase. Best is a standard. Well, high accountability, high challenge, right? Our expectations are elite, but also high level of support and encouragement and love. When you do bring that challenge, there's a foundation of support. One of the best motivational speakers in the world, this guy named Inky Johnson, you guys have seen him. He played football for Tennessee, got injured, like lost part of his arm. He was giving a talk, I think it was to Florida football, maybe Florida State, a week or so ago, and was talking about support and challenge. And he said, when you get in the moment, that challenge has to have legs of support to stand on. And that's what we're, too many coaches today are missing it. And a lot of it, one, it's out of unhealth or lack of self-awareness. I think a lot of it is they just don't know. Right? It's not out of bad intent. I've yet to meet a leader who wakes up and say, man, how can I embarrass my team today? How can I cause chaos? How can I communicate terribly? How can I shift directions 18 different times? They don't intend that, but that's the point. They're not intending to not do that either. I didn't need this when I was growing up. Well, one, you probably did. And two, just because you didn't need it doesn't mean this kid doesn't need it. And there's something wrong with them for needing a different type of leadership style. And so I think as we start to shift out of this next wave of coaches, we're part of the industry, people leaving, it's these coaches we've all grown up with are now starting to leave the industry. And so this next generation of coaches, I think, understands that at a higher level.
I think, Kevin, in some cases, I've seen coaches react in that negative, well, sort of the way Aaron was explaining the one team he was watching. And a lot of times the situation has happened because the coach hadn't prepared someone for what happens if this happens. And I've seen a lot of coaches react negatively as it's that negative or that accidental side of somebody else is to blame for this. They can't, it's not me. And that's where coaches can lose influence as well with their kids, because behind the coach's back, they're going to go, we never covered this. Why is it all of a sudden our fault? With all the levels I've been associated with, I've seen it happen, you know, high school, college, and at the professional level. And oftentimes those are the coaches that you see being the most demonstrative. It's really interesting. So many times it's just the leadership is truly from the top down, where it's a situation where the coach just wasn't as prepared as they thought. And they're looking for the player to sort of rescue them, make it look better. So,
yeah. And they're a little bit embarrassed. And so that comes out in unhealthy ways. You know, one of the things we talk to coaches about all the time is like, okay, well, what happens after a game or even after a practice? You go back and you watch film. Right? Where were we in the right position? Where do we do the right thing? What needs to be corrected? What needs to be worked on? And I always challenge coaches, like, we're doing that for the players, right? Seeing where were they in the right positions? Where do they need to be in a different place? What do they need to do better or different? Coaches, what about you? What if you watched your game tape, your body language on the sideline, your communication on the sideline or in practice, right? What would we be saying about you? Like, where were you great at communicating and your body language and your coaching? Where were you in the wrong place? Where were you in the wrong mindset? Where did you have the wrong tone? we need to be reviewing our game tape as well, because otherwise nothing ever changes, right? This whole thing of insanity is doing the same thing, expecting different results. So we always challenge them the power of self-reflection, right? At the end of each game, or, you know, wait 24 hours, let the emotions or the pressure of a game settle, but ask yourself, hey, where was I at my best in this game? Where was I communicating clearly? Where was I in the right place? Where was I in the right mindset? Okay, and where was I not? And why? And what should I do the next time I'm going to be in that situation? Because I'm going to be in that situation again and again and again. So what would a better option be? It goes back to know yourself to lead yourself. So to allow them to identify their tendencies under stress in a game, say, yep, next time I'm in that situation, I need to do this. Well, that's how we start to change our own behaviors and our own habits, which then changes our influence and the results on our team.
Hey, you know, I have learned so much about myself in watching myself back. And Brian and I talk about this periodically. I hate it.
Oh, it sucks. It's the worst.
But the insights that you gain are the most insightful, the biggest benefit to you. So on that note, I'm going to shift slightly, give you, Kevin, our final question we ask all of our guests is, as you look back over your career, what have you learned recently that you wish you had learned earlier in your work?
The power of your mind. I've been studying the brain for like 3 years now. I've been on this like mindset kick. Or what really spurred it, everything comes back to the way that you think. You could have two people in the same situation. One gets to it just fine. One gets overwhelmed. The situation was the same. It was their response to it that created that stress. And realizing, I was reading a book recently, when you have a negative thought, one, thoughts are physical things. They are physical things in our brains, in our minds. And so when you have a negative thought, it basically it does brain damage, and it makes you less able to have logic and reason and to form memories and to be resilient and to be healthy. And so negative thoughts actually do brain damage. Positive thoughts rebuild your brain, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Like, that's an actual thing in your brain. When you think a positive thought, your mind rebuilds and it becomes more resilient, becomes more confident, becomes clear, becomes healthier. I would just wish I would have known the power of the mind earlier, and how that would have shaped my work, how that would have shaped relationships, how that would have shaped confidence, which I'm trying to get into my kids now. It's like, you've got to understand, like, they're sick of me talking about, like, you've got to understand your brain. Like, everything hinges on the way that you think. I wish I would have known that at an earlier age.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. That's another podcast episode all on its own, but there is an incredible power. And you just said this just a minute ago, knowing ourselves to lead ourselves. The more we know ourselves and our brain, there is so much going on up here that tricks us, I think, into a certain line of thinking, a certain way of reacting and responding. And we've got to overcome that in some way, shape, or form, or recognize it to work through it. So just one more, the brain layer of know yourself to lead yourself. I like it. So Kevin, what are the ways that people can follow you, connect with better, and see what you're doing in athletics leadership?
Yeah, just personally, I'm at Kevin DeShazo everywhere. So Twitter, or X, I guess it's called now, Instagram, LinkedIn, any platform that you're using, YouTube, just at Kevin DeShazo on every platform. The website is bebetterleaders.com. So we've talked about the better system, ADs or coaches, schools, they can go do a demo, free demo on the website, but bebetterleaders.com and at bebetterleaders.
And we've got a special page set up at newgenerationleader.fm/better. With all those links as well, specifically for better. And we'll drop all this in the show notes at newgenerationleader.fm/50. Well, thanks, Kevin, for a great conversation. Go Sooners.
Absolutely.
Of course.
Appreciate you guys.
Thanks for coming on today, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the New Generation Leader podcast. Subscribe today on your podcasting platform. Download the show notes and unlock your true leadership potential at newgenerationleader.fm. Thanks for listening today, and we look forward to seeing you next time on the New Generation Leader podcast.
Thanks again for listening to today's show. Don't forget to check out the New Generation Leader gift guide at newgenerationleader.fm/gift. Thanks to Brian, Jim, Jay, and the team behind the scenes. We'll see you next time on the New Generation Leader podcast.